People may be less likely to ask for a raise when they're feeling insecure about the future. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, President Biden heads to Wisconsin today to push some of the ideas from last night's State of the Union address. The economy was front and center, and he offered some proposals on taxes and health care. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The word job showed up in President Biden's speech 35 times. The president cited January's 3.4% unemployment rate and said inflation is cooling.
Here at home, gas prices are down $1.50 from their peak. Food inflation is coming down, not fast enough, but coming down. Inflation has fallen every month for the last 6 months.
The president urged Republicans to work with him to raise or suspend the debt ceiling. He got booed when he accused some Republicans of wanting to sunset Medicare and Social Security. And he proposed legislation that has slim chances of passing the GOP-controlled House, like a new billionaire's tax.
But no billionaire should be paying a lower tax rate than a school teacher or firefighter.
In the GOP response, Arkansas Governor and former Trump Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders accused President Biden of not being interested in what she called the hard reality Americans are facing. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
After the NASDAQ went up 1.9% yesterday after a speech by the Federal Reserve chief in which he didn't suggest a change in interest rate policy, even as he warned things could get rockier. This morning, NASDAQ futures are down 0.2%. S&P futures down 0.3%. And I know one person who's feeling like a cheapskate going into Valentine's Day next week. There's a survey of 2,000 people by LendingTree that finds that of those in a relationship, the plan is for people to spend $187 on a Valentine's present. That's an average, with more than a quarter of those planning to finance this on a credit card. Amid the brinksmanship about hitting the debt ceiling, the U.S. Treasury's ability to pay our bills could run out in June. Some different views this week on the costs or benefits of reining in government spending. Today, a recent work about austerity made it to a list of top books of the last year in the Financial Times. It's called The Capital Order, and it uses the historical record in Europe to argue the case that austerity, tightening the belt, cutting government programs, is less about budgets and debt and more about making the labor force feel insecure on purpose. The author is Clara Matei, an econ professor at the New School for Social Research in New York, and she joins us now. Dr. Matei, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor, your close reading of the 20th century historical record finds that austerity may have a hidden agenda?
Absolutely. First of all, we should stop looking at the economy in the aggregate, because a capitalist economy has winners and losers. And for a capitalist economy to be stable, we need to stabilize class relations, which means that we need to avoid people complaining about their condition in society. And in a moment in which we see that there's more and more strikes, 50% increases in strike in 21, 22 with respect to the previous years, this is a moment in which austerity has to strike hard in getting us all back to accept the current status quo.
To understand this better, you have to understand your argument that by creating scarcity, which is what austerity can do by reining in government spending and social programs and so forth, it makes people, you would say, afraid and insecure so that they won't demand, for instance, higher wages?
Yes. The idea here is that austerity is all about getting us all to have to depend more on having money in our pocket in order to make a living, together with the precariousness that an economic downturn brings about, have the political effect of silencing demands for better conditions or even demands for more radical social changes towards a society that is based on different principles and not on the exploitation of wage work.
The subtitle of this book is How Economists Invented Austerity and Paved the Way to Fascism. the historical record in Italy after the First World War gets examined, and a picture emerges of Britain and the U.S. being okay with Italian dictator Mussolini's brutal tactics because it's under the umbrella of austerity that makes Italy a safer place for investors.
If we look close enough, what we see historically is that Mussolini was the best student of austerity. He was able to implement austerity policies very efficiently, and this provided him with the material and political support of the whole liberal elite international establishment, from the Bank of England to JP Morgan Chase to the US Treasury, applauding Mussolini because of his capacity to silence the working population in Italy, which in those years was very turbulent, quote unquote, because it was asking for radical changes and claims of economic democracy were emerging.
One thing that you certainly don't accept is the idea that when a group of economists comes trying to promote policies of austerity, that it's just a clinical decision, that it's technocratic, that politics isn't really involved because it's economics.
Absolutely. Economics is not a neutral discipline. Under austerity capitalism, it is necessary to shift resources away from the people in favor of the few, because it increases the precariousness of our livelihoods and silences the possibilities towards change that would be actually democratic.
New School econ professor Clara Mattei's book is called A Capital Order: How Economists Invented Austerity and Paved the Way to Fascism. It was listed by a Financial Times columnist as one of the best books of the year just concluded. Professor Mattei, thank you so much.
It was really wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Tomorrow here on the program, how a noted economist who served President Reagan and the first President Bush frames the dangers of spending when it runs up government debt. Marketplace.org or the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed if you missed that on the air. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.